What's the name of the show?
We haven't been on vacation that long.
Linoleum Knife. That was the opening music that I have selected especially for this episode from an Australian band called The Scientists that I used to really... I mean, I still like them. They're from the 80s.
Uh-huh.
I bought this cassette from a record store on Greenville Avenue in Dallas, Texas.
Mm.
Yeah, there used to be a record store there, and I'm blanking on the name of it. And I know that people who were in Dallas at the time would know the name of it. But you had to walk upstairs to get to this place from the street. It was an upstairs record store. And it was like,
I don't know that one then.
It was like in a building. It looked like it should have been like a loft apartment.
Right.
Like you had to go in a door and then up a flight of stairs and then through another door.
Right.
What
was that little, that cool theater space there on Greenville, on Lower Greenville?
The movie theater?
No. Like live concerts and stuff.
Oh, Arcadia.
Arcadia.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was it
near that?
I saw PIL there.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's where I saw Frank. Open for the Pogues.
And then you ran away.
I ran in terror.
And you ran away scared when the Pogues came on.
They're fans, not of the band.
Anyway, I bought this cassette at the record store where the name is blanking. I'm blanking on their name. I want to say it was called like Record Gallery or something like that. It was just some little, like, you would buy, it was where you bought weird music. Or one of the very few places in Dallas where you bought weird music.
There in VVV.
In the 80s, VVV and Bills. And
Bills, right. Oh, Bills.
The...
Head for Bills.
And there was a place in RPM up in Garland was a great place to get the stuff too. But The Scientists were this awesome band, and I bought this cassette called Weird Love, and there's a song on it called Set It on Fire.
You don't say.
That's right. There's a song in this cassette called Set It on Fire.
So yeah, we
before we talk about movies.
We did not have a show last week.
Some things to tell you
week.
About.
We need to talk about Kevin.
I think everybody knows.
Probably.
Do we think everybody who's listening to the show already knows?
I don't know if everybody does. I would imagine a good majority of them do. But for those of you tuning in late or
who have no idea what's going on.
Who want the whole story.
First thing you need to do is go to Google and type in Hollywood arsonist, or just plain old arson. And what will come up is this German ponytailed lunatic
who allegedly
visited 50 different locations in Los Angeles over the new year.
I think is
including our house.
I think the indictment
our
was
apartment
for 37
building.
37 counts.
You know what? If he did 37, he did all 50.
Although, I don't even know if we're part
or
of
maybe there were 13 other copycatters.
Maybe. Anyway.
But that first night was all one guy. He was the first night was the OG guy.
We're bearing the lead. It was.
So we are lucky.
Our place got hit. Our car got
we
hit.
We need to introduce ourselves.
We do.
I am Dave White, celebrity arson victim.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi, who will not be stepped on by bad flame people.
With ponytails.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or otherwise.
Whose
yeah.
moms are erotic masseuses wanted in Germany on
for
fraud.
Embezzling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so our car, which was, well, both of our cars were parked. Both of our cars were parked under the building. Yeah. One of them was used as the fuse.
And the fuse and the bomb, really. It was
and was totally set on fire.
And blew up.
And caused damage to some other cars, including
our other car,
which was...
It melted it.
Parked behind it and got all melty. And to the building. But luckily, the fire department and LA County Sheriffs were here very
quickly.
They
showed up really quickly.
And got it all taken care of. But yeah, so we're carless at the moment.
Well, sort of.
Well, we have a rental car.
I think we do need to.
We should explain all this because
weird versions keep popping up on the internet.
So here's what
well-meaning friends who are telling our story.
But they're playing telephone.
But it's a game of telephone, and a lot of facts are getting messed up.
Both of our cars were insured.
Yes, we had insurance.
However. One of the cars was a 1998 Volkswagen Beetle.
That's right.
Which has minimal blue book value. And we recently
zero blue book.
Pretty much. We recently changed insurers, and when we were insuring that car, they said, look, there's no point in doing like a comprehensive insurance on this because you're never going to make back what you're paying in premiums if anything happens to it, you know, because the blue book value is so minimal. So we had
liability insurance.
We had liability insurance.
So we're going to eat that. We're going to eat that one.
Yeah, that we're not getting squat for that car. The Mazda, the 2002 Mazda Protege 5, which we bought from our friend Vinny Lopez when he moved to New York, that one had comprehensive coverage on it, but its Blue Book value is probably in the $2,000 to $3,000 range. So,
if we're lucky,
yeah, at best,
like we looked it up online, yeah. And it's the prospects are not amazing.
So it's not like we're just gonna go buy another car with that. At least though, because that was covered with comprehensive, we do get a rental car for a month.
Yeah, we're driving around this like. Really, really annoying Prius.
Dave's being a big baby about right the Prius. There's no key.
Doesn't make any noise.
Too
no
quiet.
Key.
The brakes sound like sirens.
The brakes are weird. They sound weird.
I like
it's
the
like
Prius.
This. Whoosh,
I don't know that I would always. I don't know that I'd always want to drive one, but I feel like I'm in the future when I drive a Prius.
I feel like I've sacrificed my scrotum when I'm driving it. Honestly,
I feel like I'm in Watchmen. Like we're just sort of whirring around on these battery cars. Anyway. So all that went down, but then several very close friends of ours were like, well, we would like to help, and so...
And I said no.
Yes, because that's the way Dave is. But my dear college friend, Kim Yusey, started a chip-in thing. I'd never even heard of this
And
website,
I said no.
Chipin.com. And there has been an astonishing outpouring.
Gary did it too.
Gary, our friend Gary Cotty, set up a different PayPal thing. There has been an astonishing outpouring of generosity from
people,
our from friends,
strangers.
From strangers, from people who listen to this show. Someone in Tasmania made a contribution, which thank you for that. Thank you to anybody listening. If you were part of this thing, we really appreciate it. We are gobsmacked.
I'm not ungrateful. I want everyone to understand
by your generosity.
People are, you know. Friends are like, you need to be gracious about this. I'm like, I'm trying really hard to be gracious. It just freaks me out when people are giving me anything. It really freaks me out. Like I don't know what to do with that. And it and I understand that I don't have any control over it. That it's just happening. And a weird thing yesterday, our friend was like, I keep going back to the page to see if there's more money. He's treating our lives like a movie whose grosses he's tallying over the weekend. Like he wants us to break, you know, X number of dollars.
Boffo BO.
Yeah, he wants Boffo box office. Yeah. And it that's weird. Like I'm kind of like to know that it's out there to be looked at, first of all, feels like people are looking at my business and it fills me full of.
Yeah, you're like the mom in the novel of The Prince of Tides who gets the who's so appalled by receiving the charity turkey that she takes it out to the front yard and blows it to bits with a shotgun.
I would never do that. No. I'm grateful to my family and my friends and all the friends and all the strangers and everyone who's putting money in this thing. It makes me feel all crazy inside. Like I don't. know what to do with that.
It's a little weird to be on the receiving end of this sort of largesse.
You can help me do the dishes. You can give me a ride to the airport. You can decorate my Christmas tree with me. You can, you know, take me to a nice lunch. That I will say, yes, thank you very much. That was awesome of you. But when people start saying, here's $100, all I can think of is, how many meals do I have to cook for you now? Like... I'm really terrible about accepting niceness like that.
Then let this be.
I know.
Anyway, we are supremely grateful to everyone who's come through. It's really going to make it easier for us to replace the two cars.
Bruce Valanche gave us money.
I know.
We don't even know him.
I knew him a little bit, barely, from when I was at the Advocate. But you know, it was very sweet of him. But yeah, it will make our lives much easier in getting cars, because, you know, and I know for some people this sounds like a first world problem, like, oh, you don't have a car.
It is.
But this is
a first world problem, it is. But it's a weird necessity in Los Angeles. There's no public transportation to speak of here.
Yeah, it's terrible.
You can get from one place to another on a subway if you're going to Staples to see a hockey game.
Very specific places, yeah. But you're going, and if you've got hours to like deal with their schedules
or the bus,
and you know, but
takes
we're,
2 hours to get.
We're freelancers, and as Vinny said when he posted to the Chipper thing, they're freelance journalists. That's a job that barely exists anymore.
Yeah, that's true. It's wonderful what people are doing for us, and I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Anyway, we thank everyone who has participated. Yeah. You are mensches
and women mensches.
I don't know that mensch is gender specific, but
I think it just means you're a man, right?
I thought a mensch was like
a mensch is a man, isn't it?
I thought it was like.
Is there are there lady mensches?
I think in Yiddish, mensch is like someone who's a good egg. That's how I've always heard.
I see. So the woman could be a mensch.
I think
you never hear a woman being called a mensch.
You're all rad, whatever your gender. Anyway, so since we didn't do a show last week during one of the busiest movie weeks of the year, so we have a lot of ground to cover this week.
We were on fire.
Yes. We have an excuse, but anyway, we have a lot of ground.
We were inhaling smoke is what we were doing.
Right.
Our place still smells a little bit like smoke.
A little bit.
Like every morning I wake up and I think, okay, I got to open up all these windows and doors because it's still smelling a little bit like smoke.
Actually, we didn't do a show for 2 weeks, I guess.
That's correct. We didn't do one on Christmas weekend.
Because you were lazy, and then suddenly we were on fire. We were
busy. It was Christmas Day.
I didn't want to do one Christmas Day, but I wanted to do one like a day or two after.
I was having a vacation.
Well.
I was on hiatus.
Oh, okay. Well, but we didn't say that beforehand. I thought we were doing a show, like, and you had committed to doing a show. And then when the moment came, you were all... That's a direct quote, by the way.
We got a lot of movies to talk about.
We do. Let's.
Wait a second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We have 12 movies to talk about.
Well, let's be quick about it then.
All right. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Go.
Liked it. I had not seen the Swedish version, and I didn't read the book. I found it really compelling. It's a cool kind of procedural. I don't completely buy the Elizabeth Salander character. She seems a little contradictory in a lot of ways, but loved the look of it. Loved the performances. The only thing that kind of bugged me was that it felt like there were about 4 endings, and then suddenly there was not an ending because there were 2 sequels to come.
Yeah.
And some parts of it kind of felt like Fincher was sort of rehashing Zodiac and 7 stuff. But overall, dug it, would recommend.
I don't understand people who want to read the book instead. Like, people, I've seen on Facebook in the past couple of weeks, people like, I just finished A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. And they meant reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why bother? It's an airport book, first of all. It's an airport book. Anybody who treats it like it's anything more than an airport book is faking themselves out and should go read actual literature.
Right.
This is pulp.
Yeah.
And
Swedish pulp.
And it's got that air of Swedish sort of, you know, snowy gloom to it that makes people think it's more important.
Right. It's
than
not
it
like
is.
You're reading a Per Lagerkvist novel.
Right. And so the, nice.
Thank you.
The, now I'm just blanking.
People who read
my house caught on fire last week. And
stop milking it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've seen the original 3 Swedish films because I had to review them
right
for movies.com where I work.
Yes.
I
was not yet at therap.com or What the Flick, so I never got around to seeing them.
And so the first Swedish movie is terrific, and it's rough and violent and just messy and sort of like, you know, all over the place, and incredibly rapey.
Mm.
And somebody
referring to How to Train Your Girl with the Dragon. I heard that on the Team Jack podcast.
The second movie is still interesting and fun to watch. The third one is boring.
It's like a courtroom drama.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But what I like about this one is that it's I'm all coffee and you're all congested.
We have black lung.
This one is a lot more sleek and streamlined and
than the Swedish one?
Moodier than it is, you know, messy and rough and violent. And the character of Lisbeth Salander in this film, in this version, is she's more like this deadpan alien being that may very well be actually insane. You know, in the first movie, in the original Swedish film, you get the sense that she's just this brutal, brutal chick who's been wronged.
Right.
And because she's been wronged, she is going to get hers no matter what it takes, whether it's through the becoming a brilliant hacker or becoming ultra violent or, you know, or both. And sure. And this movie, this version, she just sort of looks at you weird until you run away from her. You're just like, don't hurt me.
I just kind of felt like they present her so early on as this kind of like superwoman who can break into places and hack things and da-da-da-da-da. Then I found it hard to buy her as...
any kind of victim?
As any kind of victim, especially the victim of some like schlumpy, you know, social worker.
Right.
So that was a... those two facets of the character didn't blend well for me.
Look, they needed to show her being raped on camera. Well, that was the point.
But I liked the chilliness of it, you know, which is the setting certainly helps, obviously.
And the sound design of this movie is all like, no matter where they are, inside or out, the sound around them is
yeah, like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, it's a movie where no one looks warm enough.
Yeah.
You know, really great cast of character actors: Christopher Plummer, Stellan Skarsgård, Julian Sands, who somebody just sent us a song about, which I really need to listen to.
I'm pretty excited about that.
You know, Jolie Richardson. So,
which one is she? Who's she related to again? Remind me, I'm blanking.
Jolie Richardson is the daughter of Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, okay.
The one who is alive. Natasha Richardson died, remember?
Oh, that's right. She did die. Okay, Albert Nobbs. You did not see Albert Nobbs.
I did not
Nobbs.
See it. Tell us about
it. I have seen Albert Nobbs. Glenn Close plays a guy in 19th century Ireland.
Well,
Ireland.
A woman passing.
Yeah. I mean, like a woman living as a man.
Yeah.
Which was as trans as it got back then, because there weren't, you know, actual hormone replacement situations or surgical procedures.
It's like the Ballad of Little Joe.
Kinda, yeah. And initially you get the idea that she's doing this for the sake of employment, which I guess makes a kind of sense because obviously men were more easily employed and made much more money regardless of what they were doing.
Yeah.
Just like today.
To be on your own and not married or whatever.
Yeah, and so, but then you learn as the movie goes on that she might have done this anyway. Like, she loves the ladies and is particularly in love with Mia Wasikowska, who plays a maid in the same hotel that she works at. She meets Janet McTeer, who is also a woman living as a man, who even went so far as to get a wife. It's not a terrible movie. It's tragic and it's very, very, very quiet. And it is, unfortunately, for the sake of the propulsion of the movie, of the story,
the momentum,
it's centered around a person who's gone out of his way to just erase himself and to blend in with the wall as much as possible so as to never draw attention. And because of that, it's this very, very quiet, not very, excuse me, not very showy performance from Glenn Close. And you know what the voters of awards like?
Showy.
They like it when you're playing Margaret Thatcher.
Right.
And being like, oh, you know, it's, which is not what she does. Glenn Close does not do this at all in the movie. It's a super unhappy ending. And
now Glenn Close, I mean, she's a co-writer and like a producer on this.
She did everything but make the pastries for craft service.
So
on this movie, co-wrote the theme song at the
really?
End. Wow. Yeah.
So this is a vehicle for this performance.
Yeah.
But now she did not get a Spirit Award nomination, but Janet McTeer did.
Yes.
Now, does Janet McTeer kind of walk away with the movie, or
Janet McTeer's got the swagger in this movie, and therefore is more memorable? Now,
is it the better performance or just the showier role?
It's just both? You know, it's just rougher and tougher, and you know, and that's, you know, I guess that means there's more of a transformation taking place in the minds of, you know, voting people or right. whatever. I don't even know what to think about people who vote for this stuff. I never know what they I don't understand what any of them are looking for. It seems to me that they want to be dazzled a lot. And when you're not being dazzled, you know, it's sort of like, oh, well, you know, they didn't jump and do little tricks for me, you know. And so
it's like how when
this is not a bad movie. I liked it actually quite a bit.
It's like when gay actors don't get nominated for gay performances because
That's
not acting. They just showed up. You know? Whereas they did nominate Marsha Mason for Chapter 2, where she basically was playing herself.
Speaking of gay,
yeah.
The what the flick that you were on this week, where you talk about Weekend,
yeah,
and then all the crazy like anti-gay YouTube comments you got for picking Weekend as your movie of the year, this cracks me up because I really, really love unvarnished homophobia. I think it's fascinating and it doesn't offend me at all.
And
like on
thank
any
you,
level,
internet.
Nobody
for
hurts
it
my
alive.
Feelings ever with this stuff. I just think it's really funny because, like, based on, you know, the spelling errors and stuff, right. you can assume that it's all a bunch of 14-year-old kids who are saying these
terrified
things. Terrified 14-year-old kids. But when I encounter really genuine, like, anti-gay anything, I just, it doesn't hurt my widow feelings. I look at that person and I think, so you're actually stupid. like you don't mean, like, you call people stupid all the time, you know, why are you being stupid? But you
show me the rock that you're living under.
Yeah, I want to know about your life because, like, who is this person who is actually stupid like this? I mean, obviously people like Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum, actual stupid people.
Right.
And we're watching them in action. But anyway, like regular everyday people, you know, and I don't really care what your objection is. If it's just that you don't have any facts straight in your life or if you have religious objections, either way, no matter what it is your reason is, you're stupid. And so I'm just interested in that. I don't know why I had to feel like this. We're talking about a movie about lesbians, basically. Right. So it's a digression, but not really much of a digression.
You're stupid or you're religious or you don't want people to know about that.
No, you're not stupid or religious. You're stupid. If you are religious about it and that's your reason, you're still stupid.
Right. But, well, I was going to say the other option is, or you don't want anybody to know to find out about that night at summer camp.
Right. It just makes me laugh as I go. I look at the YouTube page and it's like, they're like, you're a fag. It's like, that's what you got. Like,
yeah.
That's
what a burn.
That's the best you got.
Why? Yes. Actually.
Okay. Tintin.
Yeah. Okay. Tintin, based on the, beautifully rendered Belgian comic book by Hergé. Turned into yet another hideous three-dimensional motion capture animated film. Less hideous than its forebears, I will grant. It is a leap past the Robert Zemeckis abortions like Polar Express and A Christmas Carol, but still creepy and rubbery and dead-eyed, and I don't like it. And then the action is just so not spaced out. It just bombard you. Like
things keep happening.
Yeah, but not in
they're
not.
They're on a mission. But, they're hunting treasure.
But yes, but not in a way.
In a variety of places and in a variety of manners. Yes,
but you don't get that breathing room that makes you really appreciate the big moments. It's like, I think Spielberg's been hanging out.
Oh, you needed breathing room?
Yes, yes, I do. I think Spielberg's been hanging out with Michael Bay too much, producing those Transformers movies. Because, you know, if you
must be old if you needed breathing room.
I guess so.
I guess yes. You're just old.
You know. Because, I mean, this is the guy who made Raiders, and even Temple of Doom has its, like, down moments. And this was just like, get it for 2 hours.
I was okay with that.
I didn't like it.
But I like the Transformers movies, too.
You do.
So, I had a good time watching this. I don't have anything interesting to say about it other than that there were moments when I felt like Tintin looked like a real boy. And that we were moving quickly in the direction of character design for performance capture that really does.
I'm sure they will
that
nail
really
it.
Will take you there, you know, and so I'm okay with watching the progress. And in the meantime, it was a fun kids sort of adventure story. Nothing amazing, just, you know, lots of fun. And I had a good time from start to finish.
Just go back and read the racist comics. Okay, they're not all racist.
Are they
just,
racist? Just the I've one, never read
the
any
one,
of
the Tintin The one where Tintin goes to the Congo.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The original one was like,
What year was that from?
Google it, kids. So the 50s, I think.
I see.
It was a more innocent time, Dave.
it was a gentler time. I got nothing else to say. It's fun, Tintin. Tintin, fun.
Mm, yeah. Me not like it.
Kids are going to like it.
They may well.
Kids will like
they
it.
They may well.
Yeah.
But next. We're just going to
in the land right of through. In the land of blood and honey.
Worst breakfast cereal name
ta-da.
Ever. Thank you. That's my joke. Yeah. It's Angelina Jolie's directorial debut. It's set during the Serbian-Bosnian conflict.
And she knows how to turn the camera on and point it at things.
And keep it in focus.
And keep it in focus. And if we're, you know...
I thought the performances were fine.
They were fine. The movie is fine.
The movie is competent.
Yeah.
It, however, doesn't have a whole lot to say about...
anything other than
war is bad,
right? Stop making wars.
Yes.
Stop hurting other people, especially the ones that you think are that you claim to be in love with,
right?
Because there's a fictional love story set on top of this sort of historical drama.
Yeah, it's the center of it all is a she's.
I don't know what she.
I
is.
Forget which is what. Anyway, one
she's
of them
Muslim.
Is, she's yeah, she's Muslim, and he's. Serbian?
Okay, it's been like 3 weeks.
I know. We've seen a lot of movies since then. But anyway.
And our house caught on fire.
They're on
in the middle of
they're
all
on
this.
Opposite sides so, of the conflict, and he's in the military, and she gets taken prisoner.
I can look up my review.
And he sort of tries to look out for her, but at the same time.
At the same time, he treats her horribly and stomps on her and literally stomps on her. Like steps on her hand.
Okay, but at the
to show off for his buddies. He's a jerk. She needs to kill him and run away.
Basically, the idea is that, you know, he's still the oppressor, you know, because he's the
he is her jailer.
He's the jailer. She's the prisoner. And then she.
But he keeps her locked in a private room so they can make sweet love.
Well, and so that nobody else can rape her. Which is what happens to all the other.
Prisoners. So no one else can rape her, basically.
And then she sort of conspires with the underground. Anyway, it's fine. It's just,
look,
it's a super bummer. And you know,
I'll take it over a Serbian film.
Well,
which is essentially a film about the same thing.
An allegory about the, yeah.
But, and I was told by a listener that we must never discuss a Serbian film ever again.
Okay.
Because just the thought, just the title freaks them out.
Yeah.
And especially because this person went to the, I bet this person did not see the movie, but went to the Wikipedia page to read about it. And so is so mortified.
Mistake number one.
That it exists. Yeah. And so.
So, I mean, look, Jolie, at least, like, obviously, you know, she.
So you have my promise, listener. I'm not going to bring it up again.
She works with the UN. She is committed to sort of, you know, shining a light on things. So it's not like she chose.
She's making a movie about Afghanistan. Next.
Really? Oh, yeah. Boy. So, I mean, I want to say points for not starting your film career with, you know, Grand Theft Auto, but maybe
or lighten up a little. What was the Madonna movie called? The first Madonna movie?
Filth and Wisdom.
Filth and Wisdom. Yeah. If we're going to talk about it from that perspective, then, you know, Angelina Jolie is Orson Welles.
Yeah. I mean, hats off for tackling something big your first time out. But, you know, just because you're tackling an important subject doesn't make your movie important,
right?
I guess is what we're trying to say.
Yeah.
So, you know, nice try. I'll be interested to see what she does next and what else she's got in her quiver. You know.
Okay. We Bought a Zoo.
Ugh. Ugh.
Okay, we're done talking about We Bought a Zoo.
Okay.
War Horse.
More ugh.
No, this is where we get into it.
You're wrong. You fell for this movie.
Explain. Tell everyone your reasons for disliking it, and then I'll tell everybody the truth.
Right. Now, here's the thing. Steven Spielberg, there are movies he makes where you know they're not good, and yet you cry anyway, and you love them. Like, I love The Color Purple. I cry at The Color Purple. I enjoy The Color Purple. I know that it's not a good movie. I know that I am being masterfully played for the entire
I'm
going to
tell
time.
All the YouTube kids. What you're saying right now, just so they can.
Fine. I can't get any gayer than all that.
You just did, actually.
Like, you know, but you know, I know the difference between like being masterfully manipulated into a response and actually like a good filmmaker letting the work stand for itself. War Horse does not stand for itself for 2 seconds. This movie cannot stop telling you what to feel, how to respond, when to cry. It just like between the way it's shot, the John Williams score, there's like literally the last half hour, there are 4 separate cry now moments.
That's right.
And that's before they even get to the putting the orange marmalade on the camera lens.
Which is when you'll super cry.
To make the end look like Gone with the Wind. This movie is so phony and contrived and manipulative and horrible. I hated it. And Dave White is a wuss who is all like, me, the horse,
That boy loved his horse.
Yeah.
And they got separated. And that horse loved him back. And they found each other. That horse came back like a doggy. And everything was great at the end when the horse came back. And then you cry. And then the time when the horse is running across the field and falls down in the barbed wire.
That's
and stuff,
the best part. And they even ruined
cry then.
They even ruined that scene with like an extraneous line at the end that we didn't need.
What?
When the German soldier says like,
Oh, come on. Don't spoil it. I know what you're talking about now.
All right. Yeah, it's a crock. It's like
it was true though.
The one genuine moment of the movie, they have to undercut it by again informing you what you're supposed to be
undercutting.
Feeling.
Putting more frosting on the cake.
No.
Sometimes you want cake with a lot of frosting.
No. Is this going to be the Marie Antoinette conversation again?
You want a lot of frosting on your cake.
There's no cake in this movie.
Oh, it's a delicious cake.
No, it's all frosting. It is a frosting shot from Sprinkles, except in a barrel. 2+ hours of frosting.
I wish I had a strong defense. But I really don't.
No, that's the thing. But I mean, all you have to do is.
I loved this movie so much, and
I understand that. But don't try and defend it. Like, you know,
I was so overwhelmed with the. I saw, you know, it's like you're watching the puppet show and you see all the strings on the puppets and you know you're. I got no.
You enjoyed being played.
I have no. I really enjoyed being played.
I get that. I've been there.
I would go see it again. Oh, yeah. Like that's how That's how much I love this film.
Now, you know, I'm a softer
touch. This is my Color Purple. How's that? Okay. This is my Color Purple.
Fine. I buy that. I'm an easier touch than you when it comes to crying in movies, you will admit.
Right.
But I have definitely discovered that there's nothing that I hate more than not crying
at a movie that wants,
that wants me to cry. Yeah, oh, that's the worst.
Yeah, I get that.
So,
but you're still wrong. The movie's so great with the horsey. He comes back at the end and they are so happy together. And
burn war horse. What else?
Extremely loud and incredibly close.
Oh, God. Too soon. I'm half not kidding, really. I'm not ready for like goopy Hollywood treatments of 9/11.
I don't know. Did you see Remember Me?
No.
Okay, well, you know, that's where I come from here.
Right.
I come from the land of Remember Me.
Okay, the bar got really lowered.
Right, and so I...
Remind people what Remember Me was.
Remember Me, briefly. What's her name? What's the girl's name? Remember Me?
The girl, I don't know. Emily DeRaven.
Emily DeRaven sees her mom be shot and killed by a mugger when she's a kid. So she grows up very, 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 very sort of protective of everything, like of her own father and herself. And
her father's a cop who's protective of her.
And her father's a cop who's protective of her. And they, you know, they're real working class. They live out in whatever, Queens or whatever. Robert Pattinson, on the other hand, is a spoiled rich boy.
Who's sparkles.
Who's rebelling against all the authority in his family and et cetera. They meet and fall in love and blah, blah, blah. And over the course of the film, if you are paying very, very close attention, the background sounds, TV reports, you know, the calendar, et cetera, takes you through the course of most of a year, you know, spring and the summer, and you hear George W. Bush, you know, on the TV, and he's obviously the president. And
it's not like Margaret, where it's just because the movie sat on the shelf for...
Yeah, it's... And so it's this very intentionally specific moment in the recent past. And you get the feeling, because they talk about how George W. Bush has just been inaugurated at one point in the movie. There's a suggestion that he's the new president.
Right.
And if you're not paying very close attention, that will just fly right past you. It's just sort of like a thing in the background, like it's on a television.
Right.
And but as the movie gets closer to the ending, you realize that it's, you know, it's the end of summer, and then it's Labor Day, and then there's a you know, because you're off on Monday.
School starts again.
And then the school starts the week after, and then and so you realize that in the big grand climactic moment that it's a Tuesday. In early September, and Robert Pattinson
2001,
and Robert Pattinson gets on his bike and goes downtown to meet his father at his father's office building, and he pulls up next to that giant bull, and he gets in the elevator and goes up, 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 and the last thing you see is him standing in front of a window. And the camera pulls back from the window to reveal that he's in the World Trade Center.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, and he's about to die of 9/11. And ba-doom. Gotcha. That's the end. Isn't that moving and meaningful? This is the most hideous, disgusting, gross movie I've ever seen in my life, maybe. So extremely loud and incredibly close by comparison.
Well,
is
not even incredibly close.
Is not even incredibly close to that. It's about this kid whose father is dead, who died in the World Trade Center. And the kid is incredibly OCD, like probably
borderline Asperger's.
And has a key from his dad and has decided that the key that his father left behind in this envelope with the word black on it holds some sort of secret that he has to a mystery that he has to solve.
And because when the father was alive, he would sort of create these
puzzle adventure things
that would involve the kid going out and having to talk to people and see the city and stuff like that to sort of get the kid out of his shell.
Yeah, and so the kid goes off and is in search of what the answer is to this key.
And the kid is exasperating. And I don't blame the child actor because he's doing what he was told. But the way the kid is written and directed, shut up, kid. You know, I'm sorry. He got on my nerves really fast.
I sort of identified with this kid just a little bit. A little bit.
I was irritatingly precocious, but nothing like that.
I don't feel like he was precocious. He was just anxiety ridden.
Well, yeah.
And needed. He just wanted all the details.
Yes. Okay. He's exactly like you. Maybe I was like, I got enough of this in my real life. I don't need to go to the movies to see another Dave White.
There's a scene where the kid is asking questions of an adult with such rapid fire, like determination, like 17 questions in a row, that it reminded me of what's her face on SNL as Miley Cyrus on the Miley Cyrus show. What's your favorite color? And where have you been yesterday? And do you like Fruit Loops? And what's your favorite song? And where do you go?
And where do you get your ideas? And did you write the book?
The kid is doing this in the movie. And I sat there watching it going, oh God, that's what I do all the time. I do that all the time. I don't do it on this show. I have done it on this show, I think.
Maybe.
But I've tried to
The masses that listen to this show.
I'm trying to. I realize that I am this person. I realize that I am the kind of person that does this, and that I do it to you a lot. And that is why I am grateful that you remain in my whole life, because I'm kind of a relentless question asker.
Kind
of. Ask the nurses in my mom's nursing home. I'm. That's where I don't hold back. I'm brutal. When I visit my mom's nursing home,
I'll
be like, how come this isn't happening? Who's responsible for this? When is the doctor coming to see her? What medicine is she taking right now? When does she go to physical therapy next? Like, why have they not fixed her meal ticket order problem right? You know, like
it gives me relief to know that if I'm ever like diagnosed with some horrible disease, that you will be in there asking all the questions.
Right.
And that's what gets me through all the other times of you asking all the questions.
But so, anyway, this kid is... I couldn't hate him because I felt sort of empathy.
Kinship.
I felt empathy for this kid. Now, as far as the filmmaking goes, I believe that Stephen Daldry loves to be tasteful. I think that he always likes to err on the side of good taste. And so you can't accuse this movie of being, you know, gross. It's not gross.
No,
it's just a little pushy at the end, I think. I didn't hate it. I feel sort of straight down the middle about it.
It's hard to talk about, because for me, the one scene that I found sort of actually kind of moving and effective is also a total cheat.
I know.
That bugged me later.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Stephen Daldry, I remember I loved The Hours, and everybody talked about, oh, that movie's so emotionally remote and tasteful and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no. I remember defending it at the time. But now that I've seen The Reader and this movie, I'm like, okay, I see your point. I see what you hated about The Hours. Like, I still like The Hours, but I see that same flaw in these two movies. Right. And, I've never finished a Jonathan Safran Foer novel.
Mm-hmm.
But I
came into this ready to hate it because I have read Everything is Illuminated, but I have not read the novel that this is based on.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't read the novel this is based on because I was offended by the actual structure and the physical entity of the book itself that ends with a flip book of a guy flying back up into the World Trade Center, like an actual human being who was falling.
Yes.
Flying back up into the window. And that grossed me out so much. But I might have to go read the book now because in the context of the film, the film's presentation of this thing,
that moment,
the kid's reconstruction of that thing, it made sense in the context of this kid understanding this event.
We're now two for two in that I hated the movie of Everything is Illuminated, and I pretty much hated this one too. Yeah.
I can't say I liked it a lot, but I didn't hate it either. I just wish it didn't come out at Christmas. I mean, if you live in New York and Los Angeles, it came out on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Other people are getting it this month.
I suppose.
Throughout the month, like sometime.
And so New Yorkers especially, I'm sure, wanted to see this on Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. It's coming out across the country.
I mean, and the thing is, and while you don't get, I mean, you get a little bit of background footage of like the planes hitting the building, there is like a lot of time spent on what for a lot of people is the hardest part of the 9/11 sort of coverage, the cell phone calls.
Right.
And so get ready.
There's a lot of the cell phone call stuff in this.
Yeah.
Okay, so The Darkest Hour.
P.U. What is it about horror movies that come out on Christmas? Remember Darkness?
Yeah.
And didn't the Black...
This isn't a horror movie, though. At all. This is not a horror movie.
Well, not really.
It's a sci-fi
alien invader.
Alien thriller.
Genre movies, then.
Yeah.
But, oh, stinky.
What I loved about this movie is that the plot involves a getaway submarine.
Yes. and it involves people learning information about the aliens and then never using it.
And people inventing electricity, alien zapping guns, like with overnight.
With microwaves.
Yeah, because guns that zap the... nothing makes any sense.
The only really good thing in this movie is that there's a cat named DJ
Lance Rock.
That's it.
That's a great cat name.
That is a great cat
name.
And
he's wrapped in Christmas lights to protect himself from the aliens.
Right, from the...
I wish that DJ Lance Rock, the cat, had helmed the submarine that they get away in.
Toonses
the driving cat. Yeah, I would have liked that to have been the ending because it would have made just as much sense as anything else.
It would
else
have been logically of a piece that with happened. The rest of the movie.
The best part of this movie is that we get to see it at Grauman's Chinese.
Yes.
The big, giant, old fashioned, historically significant Grauman's Chinese
with
theater.
With
two other people. And Will, who had never been.
Well, no, I mean, outside of our party.
Local boy, 23 years old, never been to the Chinese theater.
Yes.
And so we got to see him. We had to bring him to the Chinese, and he took a bunch of pictures and sent them off to his boyfriend, I think, on the phone. Like, I think he spent a lot of the movie sending pictures on the phone to the...
Oh, well,
I don't know if
you got to do something to stay entertained.
That was the other good thing about seeing that movie. It's the one kind of... You're in such a huge, cavernous theater, and there's no one else there. You could text.
Yeah.
You could, you know, check your email, and no one else would be bothered by that.
Yep.
Yeah, because there was no one else.
No one was close enough to see the lights.
When did we go? The day after Christmas?
I believe the 26th, that Monday.
And there were thousands of people outside the theater looking at the footprints and the cement.
Yeah, the tourists and stuff.
Tourists. And there were three or four other people in the actual theater. And this theater is huge. It seats 1,000 people, 800 people, a lot of people.
Yeah, it's big. And we paid $17 for a matinee because it was
$17 for a matinee ticket because it was in 3D.
And it sucked.
$17. Hope you're happy, DJ Lance Rock the Cat. Pariah.
Terrific movie. Feature debut from a lesbian African American filmmaker named Dee Reese about a young girl in, is it Harlem? Do we know what part of New York she lives in?
Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan.
One of the boroughs. And basically, she is she's very bright. She's a good student and kind of leading a double life because...
She wears girly clothes to school, and on her way, she changes and then winds up looking like a thug.
Like that, yeah, it's the opposite of those girls on Degrassi who would leave the house looking all prim, and then they would like put on their slut clothes. She leaves the house.
Manny,
and I mean, like, even on the original Degrassi, there was a girl that did that. But she leaves in like blouses, and then like puts on like a polo shirt and a trucker cap, and
big basketball jerseys and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Hangs out with the other teenage butch lesbians that she knows.
Exactly.
They go to the teenage butch lesbian club. I didn't know that those things existed.
Well, no, they go they fake ID their way into the lesbian
club. Oh, okay.
Basically. And so it's just kind of dealing with, you know, her own search for love and her parents dealing with her.
Trying to bridge her two lives.
Yeah, and also and the fact that, you know, the parents' marriage is on the rocks for other reasons and dealing with that stuff.
Her mom's really conservative and religious.
Yeah, and her dad's an NYPD detective who's clearly having an affair.
She wasn't a super terrible caricature.
No.
You know, you see that a lot in these gay films, and it's all like
Bible thumping Harridan. No, she was very, and it's Kim Wayans giving, I thought, a really good performance. I'd really never seen this sort of dramatic side of her, but it's really good. The lead of the film is, I think, the other big breakthrough performance this year besides Elizabeth Olsen in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. The actress is named Adepero Oduye. If you are a fan of Louis, you may remember the episode where he becomes smitten with the cashier at the grocery store and, like, follows her
home on the subway. And she shuts him down
every
step of the way, and it's brutally funny.
Yeah.
And she's gorgeous, and he cannot stop himself because she's so beautiful. And by the end of it, she's like, "Look, little dude." That's a line from the show. "Look, little dude. It ain't happening." He's like, "Go away." But he follows her all the way to her door. and that's her.
Yeah.
She's
luminous in this movie. And I hope to see more. I hope she gets good roles that are not in Tyler Perry movies.
That's the best thing you can wish.
For any African American actress.
Yeah.
I want her to work
for Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
Right. But the
But
that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, probably. Because
he's gonna go right for her.
Yeah.
And because
Viola Davis has been in a Tyler Perry movie. There's
and
no escape.
Angela Bassett and
yes. Alfred Woodard.
Everybody has been in a Tyler Perry movie. So she's just waiting her turn.
Yeah. Why did I get married 3? the movie. I mean,
why did I get married to this same guy? For the third time. That's going to be the title of that movie.
You know, Pariah, I think, flirts with after school specialness, but is too
You
smart
have to
for
define
that.
After school special for a huge number of our listeners, because those don't exist anymore.
I know.
They stopped existing in the 80s. It's been 25
years.
They're
on DVD. It's an people still use them. Okay. After school specials were these things that came on in like weekday afternoons. And they were about, you know, my mom's an alcoholic, or, you know, my parents are getting divorced, or, you know, what's happening to my body, or, you know, my best friend takes no-dos a lot. You know, whatever. Right. They were all very sort of messagey and, you know, kind of empowering and, you know, and they're very kind of simplistic morality plays in a lot of ways to sort of like teach kids to cope with.
It's the one where little 12-year-old Helen Hunt gets on PCP and throws herself out a window or something.
I think that was actually a TV movie. I don't think that was an after-school
special.
The one where Peter Billingsley is all steroided up with Vince Vaughn, that's an after-school special.
Yes.
Anyway, so it kind of flirts with being like, you know, oh, this is like, you may feel like, oh, we've seen this, it's a coming out movie, blah, blah, blah. But it's too smart for that. You know, the characters are more deeply etched.
They're more complicated and the answers aren't as
pat
as it's really good.
Yeah, it's really, people should see it.
Yeah. Especially all you lesbians.
Straight up lesbians.
The Iron Lady.
Boo. Yes, Meryl Streep is awesome. This movie.
Is she?
She is, yes.
You say what you're going to say.
I think so.
The
movie is a crock. The movie lets Margaret Thatcher off the hook. And even if it didn't, it's such a simplistic and two-dimensional portrayal of a complicated public figure. You know, it's ludicrous. I think Streep is good both in terms of impersonating the woman and of making her compelling. You know, if it weren't for her, there would be no movie. There's nothing else holding this thing together. This is a vehicle for Streep, and that's it. It's terrible, though. and unconscionable, frankly, because Margaret Thatcher has blood on her hands, and this movie lets her off the hook at every possible turn. It's like...
She's like what would have happened if Ronald Reagan? If Ronald Reagan had been awake during his presidency, that's how awful and mean he would have been. Mm. That's what she was.
Yeah.
She was a horrible human being. Like, with not a shred of sort of empathy for struggling people in her own country at all. Nothing. Yeah.
If you see the Iron Lady, you should then go back and watch, like...
not a drop is what I meant to say. Ronald Reagan.
Not a dwop.
Dwop.
If you see the Iron Lady, you should go back and watch like My Beautiful Laundrette and Sammy and Rosie Get Laid.
Right.
Like actual British movies of the 80s that were about how awful Margaret Thatcher was.
Right.
Because Margaret Thatcher was awful.
So, okay, here's the thing. I think it's kind of funny how you say Warhorse was manipulative. I think it's kind of funny that this movie opens... The framing device of this movie...
Oh, yeah, is her dementia, basically.
Is basically her kind of losing her memories about things. And hallucinating,
thinking that her husband is alive.
Hallucinating about her dead husband. And the opening scene is...
She's got the kerchief on.
She got Meryl Streep is a little old lady, sort of hunchy a little bit.
Yeah.
With her hair in a kerchief. Her little coat. And she's, you know...
Going to market.
On the high street, walking up to the, you know, the market. And
to the corner shop.
She gets to the corner shop on the high street.
Yes.
And so she gets...
For a toffee.
She gets there. And she, you know, she's up at the register and she's like, 99p for a pint of milk. And the guy behind the counter is like, sorry, old lady. You know, like...
Yeah.
And she doesn't look like... You don't think it's Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, she doesn't have the hair helmet.
And so then, you know, you go back in time and you see her when she's like 15 and it's World War II and she's trying to save the family's butter dish where the bombs are being dropped.
She's
because she knows...
She's a grocer's daughter. She's practical.
She's practical.
Understands the value of things.
To save the butter from the Nazis. And later on... She talks about how, like, when you get to see Meryl Streep being Meryl Streep in the big hair and the blue outfits, she you know, she's like, you're all out of touch because you don't know how much butter costs. I know how much butter, like, that's your connection.
And so
to the
I'm
real
going to
world.
Crush the union.
Yes, it's time to smash the coal miners.
This is a movie for the people that we saw who were at Atlas Shrugged date night. They should go see the Iron Lady.
Yeah, we need to crush the unions and the coal miners because I know how much butter costs. Here's the other thing. Watching her be Margaret Thatcher was like watching Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln at Disney. And also...
So you didn't buy her as a human being, just as a sort of historical...
No, just this sort of like... Just this uncanny impersonation.
But okay, now, but is that Streep's fault or the script's fault or both?
I believe that it is not Streep's fault that she's so good at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that the script and the direction are beneath her. And
oh, no question.
I think that she... This movie really... I've turned a corner... With Meryl Streep,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And this movie did it to me.
Why is she picking these hacks to work
why
with?
Why is she... Go look at her career. Go to her IMDb page and see the movies that she has done over the course of her life and see who has directed them and written them. Some of them are great. Some of them
she's
are
worked
from...
worked with, you know, Mike Nichols
very
and Michael Cimino.
Significant but, filmmakers.
But David Frankel.
But lately.
Nora Ephron.
Lately.
This is the second movie from the woman that made Mamma Mia.
Right.
So you're right.
The compelling historical drama, Mamma Mia.
Yeah, the thing about Streep is that she's a great actress who never, like...
Works with people who are as good as she is.
Yeah, she is not going to work with Lars von Trier. And she is not making movies with leading men of her caliber.
You know who pushes it all the time and doesn't really get the credit for it? Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. Or and Catherine Deneuve, for that matter.
Right. Especially Catherine Deneuve.
Catherine Deneuve always working with the hot young.
Would Meryl Streep be in a Leos Carax movie? Ever in her life? Would she allow a filmmaker to do to her the things that guy does to his
actors?
Would
she even be
in
a Francois Ozon movie? I mean, you know, it's, yeah. Streep is very talented, but she plays it so safe.
If you don't know who Leos Carax is, go watch Pola X. One of my favorite movies of the last decade.
A movie that I felt my ears were bleeding during. But I still give Deneuve points for being in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're right. Streep definitely is not challenging herself.
That's P-O-L-A-X. Pola X.
Yes.
Go watch it. It's fantastic.
And it's not. But it's you amazing. Might find it interesting.
It is astounding. Oh. It will shake you.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Your tympanic membrane, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else?
I don't know. We're still talking about movies. What's going on?
Yes.
Rhodey. Rhodey's an indie that opened this week. It's got Ron Elder.
Yeah, it's on. He plays on demand as
Rhodey
well.
For Blue Oyster Cult. They fire him.
He comes crawling home to Queens.
His mom, played by actress Lois Smith, who. She's really good in this. Mm-hmm. She's his sort of put upon mom, who's sort of annoying. But you get the reason that she's annoying is because she's so lonely. She's a widow, and her son basically has abandoned her.
Right.
And I couldn't feel a thing for him because I was so sad for her. He's not nice to his mommy. Be nice to your mommy. Dang.
This movie, I liked her performance, and I liked his performance even, but I thought that the movie felt like a lot of Sundance cliches cobbled together about the loser who comes back to his hometown full of big talk about what he's accomplished, only to then have the horrible truths come out, you know, and it's you. There's nothing in here you haven't seen a million times.
I think it's a little better than that.
Right.
Because he doesn't fall in love with someone who looks like Natalie Portman.
True, or Emma Stone. Yes.
His connection to the world that he comes from is not like used as sort of bouncy, buoyant, sort of like audience grabbing stuff. You know, like the whole sort of like, you know, bro rock scene, you know, which could have been turned into a cute sort of parody of itself.
Well, yeah, they're never condescending about,
you know,
the fact
rock
that
and roll is not saving anybody in this movie.
No.
And it's a relentlessly downbeat. And it is a total bummer.
But it's one of those movies where people sit around and do drugs and get drunk and peel back the layers and reveal the truth. You know,
like, I understand that, but it doesn't.
Also,
it doesn't court the audience in a way that these cute little indie films do.
No. I'll give you that. But I also, I think it's one of the few bad Bobby Cannavale performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's true.
Mainly because of the way the character's written, more than anything that's his fault.
I found out that I have a cultural gap while watching this movie.
Which is?
Jill Hennessy.
You'd never heard of her?
I don't know a thing about her. She's been on tons of television shows.
She was in Chutney Popcorn.
Something called Crossing Jordan. A TV show. I know that it existed. I couldn't tell you what it was ever about. I don't know who else was in it besides her.
If
before this week, if you had said, have you ever seen Crossing Jordan? I would have said, no. And they would say, do you know what it's about? And I would have said, no.
It's one of those,
and do you know who's in it? No. Well, what? Her name's Jill Hennessy. Do you know who she is? No.
It's one of those, what is Burn Notice shows? Yeah. No idea.
But it was on for like 100 episodes or something. Yeah. And she was the star.
The star.
She was the star of the show.
I thought she was on ER, but she was not on ER.
Like, I thought she was the woman who married Harry Connick Jr.
No, that's Jill, not Hennessy.
I don't know who.
I don't know
who these people are. And so, like, I feel like now I know.
Who, way more famous than we'll ever be.
Now I know who Jill Hennessy is. And I don't. There's nothing wrong with her in this movie. She doesn't have a lot to do.
No.
But I just, as I was watching it, I was like, who's this woman? What's she done? What movies has she been? I guess I've seen some things that she's been in.
Right.
Films, I guess. But it was all just sort of like a blur.
Yeah. She's one of those brunettes.
Yeah. The Devil Inside.
Whew. You talk about this one.
Well, it's completely stupid.
Yes. It's better than The Right, if that helps at all, but it's dumb.
It's stupid.
Is there anything new to say about exorcism at this point? It all boils down to the same thing. It's like concerned priests and writhing women speaking in various languages.
They all sound like Diamanda Galas.
Yes.
Or Galas, or however you say it.
In various languages.
I'm a big fan of her, by the way.
And they always tell whoever's doing performing the rite on them some horrible secret from their past, you know. And
you had an abortion.
Exactly. You know, your mother. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And we're not going to spoil the ending, but it's already become infamous as like one of the biggest cop-outs ever.
I was sort of into the ending because it becomes a frenzied game of satanic hot potato where everybody is getting infected by the devil.
Yes.
And it just
devil cooties.
You just touch somebody and suddenly like boom, Satan's gotcha, you know.
Gwyneth Paltrow touched the pig.
Yeah. And it's the contagion of demonic possession films. And it just gets sillier and sillier and sillier and until the end where they don't actually have an ending. Like the ending is sort of like this crazy frenzy of dumb stuff happening, and then the screen just goes blank.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
screen just goes black.
This is another one of those movies.
This case was never solved.
This is.
Ta-da!
Yeah, it's almost as bad as
Devil
the ending
Inside.
It's Monster a Go-Go. There was no monster. But this is another movie where it's a mockumentary.
Right.
It's all handheld camera. Say, they're making a movie.
You're telling me you have a documentary.
Inspired by true events.
You have a documentary film that you were making, and this is the surviving footage.
Well, we found this footage.
I have to see it now.
Yes. Yeah. What a bold.
Like in my review, I wrote,
to make a film.
Show me it. Yeah. Stupid.
Stupid.
Stupid movie. Go see it.
No.
It's stupid.
No, don't
go see it. It doesn't matter.
No, don't pay.
Who cares?
To see this movie.
Buy a ticket to something else. Go see that other movie.
And then.
And when you're done, just sort of waltz on in. The Devil Inside.
Because wherever you come in, it's, you know, you can pretty much catch up with what's happening.
Yeah, something funny is going to be happening on screen when you go in there. That's it. We're done talking about movies.
Norwegian Wood.
I didn't see it. Go on.
I did.
I have to watch it today and get my review.
I did not.
I'm running late on that.
I did not read the novel by Harumi Murakami. Is that his name?
Haruki Murakami. Yeah.
Who has a new one out called, what, IQ84 or whatever. But this one apparently is a lot different from his other stuff. His other novels are apparently a lot weirder, and this is more kind of a reminiscence about youth. And it's set in late 60s Japan, and it's about this high school student who commits suicide, and that act sort of continues to reverberate in the lives of his best friend and his girlfriend, who eventually sort of try to hook up later, but she is carrying a lot of mental baggage, and you know, another girl is in love with him, but he's still, you know, obsessed with the.
Did you watch this movie?
I did. No, I'm just trying to. It's a pretty basic story, but very moving and gorgeously shot. The score is by Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead, who did the There Will Be Blood score, and it's directed by Tran Anh Hung, who is one of my favorite directors who doesn't work nearly enough. This is his fifth feature film since 1993. He did one of my favorite movies of all time, probably, The Scent of Green Papaya. And he also directed Ciclo and The Vertical Ray of the Sun.
The Vertical Ray of the Sun is really beautiful.
And this film stars Rinko Kikuchi as the girlfriend of the kid who kills himself, who was in Babel and in The Brothers Bloom. And in both films...
Does she talk in this movie?
She does talk in this movie. In those two films, she doesn't say anything and is incredibly compelling. And what's great about Tran Anh Hung is, you know, it's not real dialogue heavy. I mean, there are conversations, but there's also long stretches of not talking.
Yeah.
And so that's a kind of a perfect actor-director combo there. I liked it a lot. And my impression from reviews has been that people who like the book are not as crazy about the movie, but I never read the book, so that wasn't a problem for me. It's kind of sweeping and romantic and sad, and you know, I was very into it. I liked it a lot.
Great, that's great. I'm gonna watch it later.
Okay. Okay. Do we want to talk about best of, worst of, since we're at the end of the year? Or?
I'm tired of talking. I'm tired of talking about movies. We just talk about 12 movies.
Fine. All right.
Everybody knows what my favorite movies were last year, anyway. Boone Me and Muppets.
Right.
Uncle Boone Me, who can recall his past lives, and Muppets.
My favorite. What else? My favorite with an asterisk.
Love Exposure.
Right. My favorite with an asterisk is The Clock, the Christian Mark Lee thing.
Yeah.
But I saw only 9 hours of the 24, so I'm gonna they're gonna do it again at LACMA in March, so I'm gonna go back and see some more of it. Beyond that, my favorites were Weekend and Attack the Block.
Great.
Is there something else we're gonna?
No DVDs this
week. No. I'm tired too.
It's nap time. I need to have a nap, maybe. That would be good. Yeah.
Oh, no, we have a letter. That's what we, the other thing.
Oh, yeah, we do have a letter. I'll read it right now.
Yes.
Here's the letter. Let me pull it up here.
From linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, which I realized in the show that you did with Greg.
John asks.
You got our email address wrong.
John writes, in several episodes of the podcast, you have complained about what a terrible Theater of the Grove is. Weird smells, clueless staff, irritating 3D glasses, etc. It's bad enough that you have to pay good money to see movies that companies like Freestyle and Lionsgate are dumping out there without critics' screenings. Why make the pain worse by seeing them at such an awful venue? Is it the lure of warm donuts from Bob's Coffee and Donuts that keeps you coming back? Answer? Yes.
Yes. That and the fact that...
Here are the reasons why we go to the Grove.
It's 5 minutes away.
Bob's Coffee and Donuts. It's 5 minutes away. It is 5 minutes from our house.
Yeah.
When we go, not only is it 5 minutes from our house, but we are there generally in the morning. Mm-hmm. There's nobody there. We can go right up to our favorite parkings, our favorite parking level of the structure, park seriously 5 feet away from the escalator, and go down there.
It's an abusive relationship, but it's what we're comfortable with.
Yeah.
The familiarity.
There's also Little John's Toffee and Fudge in the farmer's market right across from Bob's Coffee and Donuts. And you go there, you get their vanilla fudge, and your life will change. It's about eating, really.
Yeah.
There are lots of things to eat at the farmer's market, which is near...
Which is Grove adjacent.
The Grove. It was there first, and the Grove has decided to parasite itself onto the farmer's market.
Like mushroom.
Just and so...
came out of the ground.
Yeah, it's just what exists in our neighborhood. And we would like it if Pacific Theaters would hear our cry.
And put some money into the place.
And make
hire better people.
Put more people on staff. You know, fix their ticket machines. Have more than one projectionist for however many screens they have.
Switch their 3D system out away from X-Pan.
Yeah. Have more than a single human being at the concession at any given moment. The drink machines, it'd be nice if the drink machines always had the soda that it was supposed to have. if things just weren't falling down in this new theater where you pay a lot of money.
Yeah, because it's only a few years old, right?
Yeah. And so they're cutting corners in a way that is gross and makes the viewing experience and makes the social experience of it not awesome. The Arclight has maintained itself, but this place just has not.
The AMC
the Arclight takes... The Arclight takes 10 to 15 more minutes to get to than the Grove.
And also...
And there are no warm donuts.
Right. And the Grove tends to have the first show on a Friday morning.
Yeah, the Grove will have shows as early as 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Which, is kind of...
When you're on deadline.
Yeah.
It's,
not 8 o'clock, but I've been to shows there.
8:30.
I've been to shows there at 8:30 in the morning. Yeah. So that's, that's your non-answer. Because we're lazy.
Basically.
And we like donuts.
We can just roll out of bed and be right there. All right. Well, thank you for your letter. And anybody else who has questions or comments, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us at Facebook on the Linoleum Knife page. You can like us there. You can follow us on Twitter at linoleumcast. And you can check in to us on Get Glue, even though we're listed as a TV show and they don't seem to want to fix that. We want to thank everybody who has been so generous and compassionate with the chipin.com campaign. And also thank...
But you can quit. You can stop. Like... It just stop.
Okay.
Not you. Just everybody. Just
let them be.
Leave me.
They can do what they want. We want to thank our podcast pals, the Popcorn Mafia, the Comedy Couch, Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, who are doing another live show on January 20th. If you are in Los Angeles at the Celebration Theater, Blowhard, the podcast is no longer. Apparently, Fozzie has. He's going to do something new. So when we know what that is, we'll tell you. Criterion Cast, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Schmoes Know, Game Night Guys, Throwing Shade,
all the other podcasts,
Secretly Timid,
that ever
Glitter
existed.
In the Garbage. Thank you all for being lovely and supporting us every so often. And we thank you for listening. We will be back next week, and then the week after that, I go to the Sundance Film Festival.
Yay, a week off!
And we do a show. We have to figure out how that's going to go. Maybe we'll do it when I get back, or
Gray could come. Gray could come back.
Gray could come back. Yes, or we could do the show when I get back, or figure something out.
Greg could come back.
Yeah, you'd like that, wouldn't you? Why don't you just go do a show with Greg? And y'all can make fun of me.
I like doing shows.
I won't stand
great.
In your way of podcast awesomeness. I'm obviously just a millstone around your neck.
I just really like Greg.
Yeah,
we're friends.
Yeah, she's my friend too. And I had a great time doing the podcast with her without you. But you know what? We are tethered to each other. So
yeah, that's yes. Goodbye.